So Force of Nature is not a great episode of The Next Generation.
No.
And it's, I would say it's a noble failure. I can see what they were trying to do with it. Environmentalism was obviously very big in the early 90s. But it's just not constructed very well.
It's a very, I found it a very boring episode. Like, it's one of those episodes where just everybody feels like they're phoning it in. You know, there's stuff that's happening outside the Enterprise that they're just kind of like narrating. They're not even showing it. Everybody, you know, the actors just seem like they're just kind of, they're just tired this week. You know what I mean?
Well, what kind of stuff do you think would have benefited from being shown?
Well, I mean, it's more like, well, it's just certainly not all of this business with Geordi and the cat and all of that. Like this, I don't know. It just, it's one of those episodes that they just, this feels like it's a very important event within the chronology of Star Trek. In other words, warp drive is a technology that may have some side effects, is a fairly significant thing.
And we'll talk about that because but, that is not a great decision.
Yeah. Well, but that's the kind of thing, like, you can't do that in a throwaway episode. That's the kind of thing that you need to, like, if you're going to commit to that kind of a change in your world building, you need to commit to that change.
Well, and I think, yeah, I agree with you, but I think that one of the things that is so aggravating about Force of Nature is that it is a noble failure. Like, I get the impetus for doing an environmental episode. I get the impetus for wanting to connect it somehow to warp drive, but it's just the episode as constructed is very front loaded with a wacky sitcom plot about Data training his cat.
Yeah.
Which ends abruptly after about 10 or 15 minutes. And then suddenly the episode shifts gears entirely and goes into a very serious exploration of the possibility that warp drive is destroying the universe. And it doesn't work. There's no part of this episode that really works, that really feels like anybody put a lot of thought into this or how to construct it. And frankly, I think that it's so tonally off that it's hard for me to fathom what they thought they were doing.
I mean, can I be honest about something? I mean, this episode suddenly seems to think that Spot is a she. I think that's the indicative of everything that's happening in this episode. Spot,
well,
I mean, no, but I'm serious about that. Like, Spot has always been a he cat, and like, they're calling, you know, Spot a she right now. And that's just kind of, I don't know. To me, that was just like, this is an episode that just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. And I kind of disagree. I mean, one of the things about The Next Generation is that it's you could get away with that kind of thing in television 25 years ago.
I know you could, but
not everybody was watching every single episode like we were, and or we are, I should say. And so, you know, okay, the cat is a sheep, whatever.
But at the same time, this is a show that's, when it's at its strongest, it's taking bits of character that have been established and, you know, looking deeper into that, or it's, you know, seeing about the implications of a certain relationship and all of that. And I guess, you know, this is an episode I felt wasn't very carefully done. It was just kind of put together. It was a very filler episode. And, you know, they didn't even care enough about the continuity or like, they didn't even care about this episode enough to realize what gender the cat was, when the cat is apparently a major part of this episode.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure why they decided to change Spot into a female. There must have been some reason for it.
Again,
but
it just feels like, you know, oh, I'm going to put a hilarious cat plot line in. Well, I guess this cat's a shit, you know.
Well, and that was the weird thing. I mean, you know, we're talking a lot about the cat, but it's very,
because it's so there. It's the first scene. There's a very long bit when they're like scanning something and it doesn't really matter what they're looking for, because, you know, and they're just using this cat plot line as a way to add punch and interest to this. And it's like,
well, and it feels like a plot line that's written by someone who doesn't understand cats, because as far as I know, cats are basically untrainable,
pretty much.
And so it feels like a plot line written by some sort of space alien who doesn't understand what the feline is, because you can't train cats. They're not trainable. Why would anybody try to train a cat?
You know, something
like it just, it strikes me as bizarre. It's like if someone wrote an episode of The Next Generation about, I don't even know, like, what is
like
this?
Like, the one part of that that was enjoyable was Geordi saying, oh, you know, cats are totally trainable. Yeah, my sister kept a piece of tuna in her blouse for a month. You know, like, that's a cute little, like, fine.
I think they used that joke in the Golden Girls. I know,
but, like, if that was, like, the entirety of the bit, if that was, I'd be like, all right, fine. They just really wanted to use that joke. Fine, but they make such a thing about it, and it goes nowhere. It means nothing, it does nothing, and Geordi and Data are both acting weird, but in a way that I can't even, like,
I can't even describe exactly how they're acting or why they're acting like this. And frankly, it makes them seem stupid. Like, both of them just seem like idiots in this episode, because we all know that you can't train a cat. So why would you even try?
Maybe it's like, are they trying to be the comic relief in this episode when they're not doing a good job
of it? But the thing is, like, at least make it comic relief about something that makes some kind of sense. Like, this makes no sense.
I mean, maybe
it's basically like if someone was like, you should potty train your 4-month-old baby. You can do it. Here's 15 minutes about how you're going to potty train your 4-month-old baby. Like, you can't do it. It's impossible. So why would you even try? It just feels like someone who did not understand the reality of the world, like, wrote this. It's bizarre to me. Yeah. Like, I really can't get past this.
No.
Geordi is wandering around saying, you should really train your cat. And Data's like, yes, I should train my cat, because cats are creatures that can be trained. Like, what? I don't understand.
Maybe
this.
Somebody lost a bet. I don't know. Like, I was watching this and I'm like, what am I seeing?
What is even going on here? Like, yeah, you can train a cat to use a litter box, but that's about it. You're never going to train a cat to. He was like, the cat doesn't come when you call. Like, Geordi was like, the cat doesn't come when you call. Cats don't come when people call. That's why they're cats.
That's
dogs.
One of the things.
What is going on? I don't even understand.
But again, like, and they're showing this to us like we want to watch it. Like, we're going to be this came from multiple people saying, you know what would be entertaining? This scene. Like, this scene is the result of several people working together to entertain us with this. Several scenes.
I guess.
It's not even that it's just one bit. It's a through line to the episode.
Well, it's not even a through line to the episode, because it disappears after about 15 minutes and they never go back to it. So it's completely unresolved. It's just sort of like there's a final scene of Data trying to get the cat to not jump up on his console or something. And then suddenly we pivot into a very meaningful episode about Geordi's faith in technology. And you're like, what the hell is
even
going on?
I mean, doesn't it seem like the first, like, we know that a lot of times there's these filler plots. It's because, you know, okay, you know, we'll joke like, oh, the episode is running short. Well, maybe they did, like, come up with a half hour of this episode, but, like, they expanded it in the weirdest place. Like, they didn't say, okay, let's have more scenes between, you know, Geordi and the scientist. And, you know, we can, or let's have more scenes about what the implications of warp drive are. Let's stuff that would be interesting. But no, you know, what we're going to expand is the shit with the cat.
It really does seem like they needed to work on this script for another few days, or at least, I mean, because frankly, there is a good storyline here. And I think that if it had been more fully developed, I mean, this could have been an episode of the show that could have really worked. But for whatever reason, it was, all the permutations were not worked out. All the kinks were not worked out. And so what happens is you rush from scene to scene to get to a logical place where they're making a point. And I think, you know, one of the problems with Star Trek is that it is very famous, or at least the original series is very famous for you know, constructing episodes around making some sort of social commentary. Yeah. And that's something Star Trek is famous for. And we've talked about that ad nauseum in previous episodes of the podcast. But when they do it badly,
it's so cheesy.
It's just terrible. And, you know, this is a very important thing to talk about, but they don't do a good job of it at all.
Like, okay.
And, you know, they're pulling the rug out from the entire franchise, basically. And for what reason?
Yeah, again, if you're going to do this plot, that scene at the very end when Picard is looking and he's saying, you know, I always wanted to, you know, explore, and, you know, I'm horrified at the idea that, you know, I mean, I've seen so many things, so many wondrous things, you know, Picard has never regretted any of his time. And now he's realizing that the very act of exploration might have damaged, you know, the things he was, you know, like that was a very profound scene and a very interesting scene and a very poignant scene. And it seems like they wrote that scene, but didn't know how to get there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And, you know, I would like an episode which justified that scene in a way.
Well, there's some groundwork that really needs to be built here, you know, because I can see what they were trying to do. You know, they're trying to make, you know, all of this talk about Geordi and the thing and the technology and sort of the competition between him and the other engineer,
yeah.
You know, trying to get the whatever percentage.
Oh, yeah. Up. They totally forgot it. They dropped that, too.
Well, he did it. I mean, that was fine. He ended up doing it, and that was great. You know, so obviously they're trying to sell the idea that Geordi has this faith in technology, that technology is the impetus to all the world's problems. It's going to solve all the galaxy's problems. You know, the Federation is built on technology, which is it's harming the galaxy, right?
Well, what I would think would to go a little further. I mean, the show has made it clear from time to time that, you know, technology needs to have that moral element to it. In other words, you know, you can use warp technology for good or for evil. You know, you can use it. You know, you can use a starship to destroy a system, or you can. This one is saying, well, it doesn't even matter the morality to what you're putting to it. Like, the very technology itself is damaging.
Well, yeah, and I mean,
and that's.
And I think, you know, and it's funny because I think that this is a very, I mean, you know, again, I mean, we don't talk a lot about putting the Next Generation in a certain sort of historical context in the same way that we talked a lot about putting the original series in a historical context, because a lot of times, you know, the Next Generation is a different show. It's doing different things, and it's not as interested in the historical context than the original series is, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, sometimes the show does do this. And so, you know, with episodes like, for example, The Outcast, or with this episode, they are trying to say something about a current event, mm-hmm. something that is important to the world. And so I don't want to undersell that. I do think that, you know, environmentalism and the environmental movement really did become a very strong force in the early 90s.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, all of this kind of stuff, right? You know, Earth Day, I think, was founded around this time and all this stuff.
And places were en masse getting rid of leaded gasoline, you know, things like that.
Right. The whole, I think what, like styrofoam and things like that.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, CFCs. The ozone layer was huge. You know, the ozone layer sort of disappeared at this point. Not as.
Literally.
No, it's still around, but I mean, just as a point.
As a cause.
Yeah, as a cause. And so, you know, if we're looking back on this with 25 years of hindsight, where we're looking at. 2014 having been one of the warmest years on record, with just massive changes happening all throughout the world, and, you know, environmentalists saying, you know, we really need to be on sort of a World War II level footing to really stop this. Like, we can't live like we have been living.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very important issue. We are destroying the planet. I mean, you know, if things continue the way that they continue, if we don't cut carbon emissions, the planet, you know, vast swaths of Earth will be uninhabitable in 500 years, mm-hmm. you know, and global industrial civilization, as we have known it in the past 200, 300 years, is going to be basically impossible. And we have done it all for being able to drive to the supermarket. That's, you know, that's pretty big, right? And I don't even think that was even quite on their minds at that point, right? So this is an episode that has a lot of resonances later on when you watch it, you know, in the 21st century. But they don't do a good job of it at all. And I'm not really sure why. I don't know if they just had a problem. Niran Shakar wrote this episode. I don't know if he had a problem coming up with some sort of analogy in the Star Trek universe to really sort of sell this. I don't know. But what it ends up being is an episode that sort of lurches from plot point to plot point without any sort of real through line or any sort of real subtlety or characterization, and ends up basically, you know, cutting the legs off from Star Trek, you know, because now suddenly we're faced with having a warp 5 speed limit.
Yeah.
And when you limit warp drive, you really limit Star Trek. It's something which is almost entirely ignored later, you know, and I don't think that, I mean, you can get away with ignoring that kind of thing in this kind of show, but I don't know why you would even introduce
then
this.
I would
kind
say,
of,
then what was the point of watching this episode?
Exactly.
Again, if this is going to, you know, if they're going to say, all right, look, well, we're doing DS9, you know, this is a plot point we want to put in DS9 and, you know, going forward in Star Trek, you know, if they wanted to do that, I could see them doing it. I could see that being interesting. But again, then commit to it. Then, you know, every time then this warp 5 speed limit has to be an issue, has to be a plot point in things, has to change the way they're going forward, has to now suddenly people are going to be crazy looking for a way to replace warp. I mean, that's the thing every single Federation energy scientist is going to be doing now, right?
I mean, I would hope so, but I don't know that that's the case necessarily.
Yeah.
And the episode seems to leave us with that implication that the Federation is really going to look for a way to fix this problem, which is fine, you know. But again, I don't begrudge the episode for having these sorts of ambitions.
Yeah.
I begrudge the episode for
not having follow through,
and also just not being constructed in a way which makes sense or is any sort of, which is satisfying in any way, really. You know, it's a very big episode, and when you spend the first 10 or 15 minutes, which is basically a third of the running time of the episode, on a wacky sitcom plot about Data training his cat, you know, it just comes across as kind of amateurish, really.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those either you needed to not make, or this needed to be one of those two-parters and actually give it the space to breathe and tell this full story.
I just don't know, you know, is the last season of a TV show, which is getting a bit tired, was this the best use of one of their 26 episodes?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yes, it's important for Star Trek to tell an environmental story, but at the same time, they did it and it's not great.
And,
so,
let's face it, there was, you know, it's also not like they also really knew they were continuing. If they thought, you know, this is the last season and we're probably never going to make another Star Trek again, then all right, you can introduce a world changing thing. You only have a few episodes where you have to really deal with it and the end, you know, but this is, they have to know, especially given the way that Deep Space Nine apparently tells the story, where it does have, they have to know that dropping a bomb like this can't just be, you know, I don't know. I keep coming back to this, you know, they did this so half-assedly, this episode.
Yeah, it really does feel half-assed, and it really does feel like they had no thought to what the implications of this would be, you know, and maybe they didn't care, frankly. I mean, maybe they were just kind of like, well, you know, we've got 14 episodes or whatever they had left, and that's going to be the end of it. Deep Space Nine, of course, was on their radar because I think Deep Space Nine was in its second season at this point, but maybe they didn't think it was that much of a problem. I don't really know. I mean, you know, because Deep Space Nine is a stationary show a lot more than The Next Generation is. So maybe they just figured, well, it's a space station, so whatever. It's not really going to factor in. I don't know. I mean, Voyager was in the planning stage at this point, so they obviously knew that that was happening. You know, it's a weird thing because I don't think that the Star Trek franchise has ever really been very good at world sharing, if you know what I mean. Like when two shows were on, the primary time that happened was, you know, five years of Deep Space Nine and five, you know, 5 years of Voyager. And they were basically completely separate because Deep Space Nine was the only show that was taking place in the traditional Star Trek universe. Yeah. And Voyager was off halfway across the galaxy doing their own thing.
So in other words, it's in an area where they wouldn't even have speed limits and, you know.
Well, they would still have speed limits, of course, because it's a space, you know, it's a Federation starship and they knew about this. But what I'm saying is that Deep Space Nine could do its own thing and Voyager could do its own thing because even though they were taking place in the same shared universe, Voyager was, you know, in universe halfway across the galaxy. So whatever happened on Voyager was not going to affect Deep Space Nine and vice versa.
Okay.
Right. It's not like Voyager was going to appear on Deep Space Nine 1 week. It wasn't going to happen. So, you know, Star Trek is not good at that. And so I just think that the staff of The Next Generation perhaps was just not good at thinking about it like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, again, given that there, what other really shows did that, you know, especially at that time? And even now, you know, there isn't that much.
Yeah. I mean, not too many, you know, I mean, certainly there are some franchises that have done that. I mean, Law and Order and stuff, but
I mean, for the most part, especially crossovers is just, you know, think of the traditional way is, you know, okay, well, this show is about the neighbors of the, you know, or about, you know, we're focusing on his secretary or whatever. And it's so, you know, it's characters who very comfortably exist in each other's, you know, worlds but don't really need to affect each other. And given the scope of most sitcom storytelling, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, no one plot is going to affect everything else. So it's, again, you get the sense they didn't know to think that way.
I suppose so, yeah. I do want to talk about Geordi, though, because I think that this is kind of an interesting episode for Geordi. I don't know exactly to what degree Geordi is supposed to feel bad. I mean, they make a point of having him talk about regret, and I think Picard is talking about it too, and, you know, where they're kind of both talking about how, you know, Picard has been exploring the galaxy,
yeah,
and Geordi feels bad because, you know, what he's been working on his entire life and sort of his faith in technology is sort of has been destroying the galaxy. And I just don't feel like they sold that enough.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's there are ideas that are set up in the episode that are just never paid off properly.
But it goes with the whole way the entire episode was. That would be a very interesting thing for Geordi to have. You know, we're beginning to see characters dealing with repercussions of things that that were fundamental to them that they never really dealt with, and they're finally resolving. Again, this is the last season. So yeah, let's deal with Geordi's relationship to technology and the fact that he sees because of technology. You know, he thinks of technology as he thinks of technology as a full stop good.
Right.
And, you know, again, he can see technology in the wrong hands, you know, being used for evil. But this is the Federation, you know, we're doing this right, you know, and we're going to figure this out and everything's safe. And, you know, we wouldn't. And here he is being confronted with proof that that's not really the case. And, you know, it's kind of tumbling his worldview. Yeah. It would be interesting to see all of that, but this episode can't handle it.
And it's all very perfunctorily done.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the problem with the episode, is that it really does feel like they had a checklist and they're just going, okay, we did this, we did this, we did this. And there's no, you know, the sort of, you know, Next Generation at its best, with the sort of subtlety and its sort of very nice characterization is just not present here. And it just really does feel like a very sloppy episode of the show.
Yeah, that's...
And again, it's just I'm left with this idea that, you know, they really are just cutting the legs out from Star Trek with this speed limit thing.
Yeah.
And just what a monumental decision that is. And for what exactly? You know, I mean, they do try and sell the idea that this is really big when the scientist, you know, basically commits suicide to create one of these.
But, you know, what
breaches in subspace, whatever the hell it is.
What I thought was funny is she ends up, you know, one of the things that the episode kind of touches on but doesn't really deal with is the fact that she, you know, yes, this thing was happening, but she accelerated it to a ridiculous degree. She doomed her planet, you know. It's essentially like protesting nuclear power by detonating a power plant.
Yeah.
You know, or causing a meltdown. You know, and the episode doesn't really deal with that much. And that's another missed boat. You know, she is an environmental terrorist, but they don't really seem to realize the implications of what that means.
Yeah, well, and I think that's really true, but I also think the real problem with that, of course, is that they needed some way to dramatize exactly how big this problem is. And they chose a way that needed to be explored further. You know, and that's kind of really, I think, the real, you know, sadness of this episode is that there are so many things in the episode that needed more time to breathe and more time to be expanded out, to explain, to put a bit more subtlety to it. And instead, again, what they gave us is the first 15 minutes being a sitcom. And I'm not just, you know, it's just not something that I'm interested in really watching.
Yeah.
It's just bad, you know, and talking about it, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of this episode. And I started out this conversation saying, I think it's a noble failure.
Yeah.
I do think it's a noble failure, but I think the emphasis is on the failure part.
Like I said, I was just bored. I was bored during this episode, no matter what. It was a boring episode.
Yeah, yeah. I did like, though, that the very end of the episode did try and make some sort of analogy between, you know, present day Earth and the Federation and the Cardassians and the Romulans and the sort of idea that, okay, well, the Federation will obey the speed limit, but the rest of the alien races are not going to. And so, you know, obviously the idea there being that, well, America might do this, or yeah. Europe might cut carbon emissions or whatever, but China isn't, India isn't, you know? And so, yeah, it could have worked. I really think it could have worked. I can see a version of this.
And they also talk about, you know, and we'll grant exceptions if we need to, and there will be people who flat out ignore it. You know, it's, again, it's going to be a suggestion.
Well, they even said as much right at the very end, where when Picard is reading the orders from the Federation Council, and he says, yeah, you know, you're limited to warp 5 from this point forward, but you can break it under like extraordinary circumstances. Yeah. So that is kind of the thing they have in their back pocket, I guess. But I don't know. It's not – they don't sell it. They just don't sell it. And for something that's as important to Star Trek, yeah, as something like this – It's just kind of sloppily done, amazingly sloppily done. Yeah. I think, because this is just not the show. This is not the show we've been watching. It's not well done.
This gets a speed limit of warp 3.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think 3 is a good one. All right, well, let's talk about Inheritance, which I think is everything that Force of Nature, yeah, is not. It's subtle. It's quiet. It's got some great character work, and it has a surprising resolution.
It's got Mrs. Hawking from Lost.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, this season has been, you know, about wrapping up loose ends, and this is Data's loose
end. Let me put it this way. This was, like, compare this to Descent. I mean, it's, yeah, really funny to do that, because the...
Or horrifying.
Just because the characterization of Data here... This feels normal. This feels natural. This feels like who Data is.
Yeah.
And Descent was just all over the place. This is something that does understand who Data is and what, you know, makes up him up and how he is the way he is and why.
Yeah, yeah. Well, expand on that. I mean, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking specifically of the scene where, you know, she's in his room and... You know, she's looking at the paintings and talking about, you know, how he plays violin, you know, and all of that stuff. And she says, you know, that's really funny, you know, that, you know, I thought you would be, you know, inspired to create, you know. And again, what I've been saying all along is Data, you know, Data never got this emotion chip. He never got this pure, you know, raw emotion beam that, you know, Laura was giving him, you know. But he still developed emotions. Maybe they're not the most... you know, colorful and external ones, but he does have feelings. And, you know, the point here is that, you know, yeah, even if he wasn't created with the desire to create, well, that still will happen. Maybe, you know, it doesn't matter where Data kind of started from. He's evolved into this. He's evolved into a being who wants to express himself and wants to reproduce and wants to love, you know, and form bonds with people.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I also think that, you know, what that really makes me think about is, you know, the difference between, you know, Dr. Tainer and Data. Because, you know, the episode reveals towards the end that she is an android, which, yeah, you know, is surprising and all that kind of stuff. But she was designed, and Dr. Crusher, I think, or Geordi says that she was designed to fool people into, yeah, thinking that she's human, right? I mean, she's giving off fake biosignatures, and she's breathing, and she has normal skin tone and all this kind of stuff,
right? I mean,
right?
You want to go further, and this is something the episode doesn't really say. She wasn't designed to give people the impression she was human. She was designed to give herself,
yeah,
the impression, sure, that she was human. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't think that, you know, the Doctor's created as an infiltration bot. You know, this is not a Terminator we're dealing with. But, you know, she believes she's human and has been created so that a cursory examination of herself would lead to that conclusion.
Right.
Which is fascinating. Right.
Which is, well, yeah, and it's also the question I have about that is, like, does she poop? Like, what, like, what, how
I said, does she ever get sick? Yeah.
Like, how does this work exactly? But, you know, the questions aside, you know, that's not really relevant to the episode. But, yeah, and I think what I want to really relate that to is the idea that Data does have emotions and he has developed his own sort of emotions. Because here we have another Assume type android who is obviously much more advanced than Data, yeah, in some respects, right? Who is able to mimic and even probably feel,
yeah,
The sort of physiological responses to emotions, you know, the very strong ones like sadness and anger and all of these kind of things, right? To a degree which Data is not. And so What exactly does that mean for Data, and what does that mean for androids in general? Because she's able to experience the full range of emotions and not even realize that she's an android. Data is not, but it's never really implied that she has an emotion chip. It's never implied that she is mimicking these emotions. It's implied that she's actually feeling them because, like you said, Dr. Soong did this to convince her that she was still alive.
And again, let's put it this way. If Data, who had no special programming towards emotion, has managed to develop them, I would say it's, you know, she maybe even had more of a head start with this. But, you know, these are still naturally developed and evolved emotions from her as well. You know, because just because she started with, you know, maybe she'll have more of a physiological response like laughing or crying or whatever, you know. Again, Data doesn't have tear ducts. She does. But, you know, their concept of sadness is still going to be socially constructed. And also keep in mind that, you know, Data started from a blank slate and was programmed in.
Yeah.
She started from a scan of, you know, her own brain. And, you know, the implication is that she just experienced it as, you know, a couple of week coma or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that it's interesting, right? Because there's no indication that they're going to tell her that she's an android, right?
Quite the opposite. I think they are deliberately going to keep the secret.
Yeah, I mean, because they say she was designed to age. She was designed to eventually die. And so,
especially given her age, one of the implications is that, you know, it's not going to be forever before that happens.
But it does make me wonder about Data again, though, because, again, this is an episode about Data. I mean, this wouldn't be an interesting episode if it was not Data's mother, in effect, right?
Yeah.
And especially, I think, of, you know, the scene where Geordi and Data discover that there's some sort of holographic thing on the emotion chip, and he talks to Dr. Soong in the holodeck, and Dr. Soong is telling him exactly what happened and this kind of thing. And, you know, on the one hand, Dr. Soong has always been sort of he's been there as a kind of deus ex machina figure to kind of, you know, explanatorily tell the audience what they need to know through Data at the time. I mean, you know, all these kind of things, right? But, and the idea, of course, also that there were other androids before Lore, which, you know, is something that we had never known before as well. I think she said there were three of them, right? But it's not an episode which makes any of these revelations feel like gimmicks. And, you know, because on the one hand, there's never been an indication that Dr. Soong was married. There's never been an indication that there were any androids before Lore. But the episode is able to pull it off in a strange way.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, the way she talks about how they had, you know, a couple of attempts to, you know, create androids that didn't work out. I mean, she describes that almost as somebody talking about having a few miscarriages before actually, you know, having a child. And, you know, that's a very, you know, that is a kind, you know, a thing that's a, hell, if Loxana Troy didn't tell about her daughter who lived to 7 years old who died, you know, if that was such a source of pain and shame. You know, again, these are babies that didn't come to term, and that she felt increasingly irresponsible for attempting to bring them into the world. Again, when she says, you know, I was against the idea of creating you. It's because, you know, not because she didn't want Data, but more because she didn't find it morally responsible to create another being who would die.
Right. And I guess, you know, there are some shades there because, of course, Data is dealing with this revelation, right? That in a sense, one of his parents did not want him to be born, if we can kind of take this analogy to that degree. But I also think that it's interesting because, you know, there's you know, we don't know everything about our parents, right? And there's a lot of things that we don't know about our parents.
Yeah.
And so the episode very wisely, I think, doesn't really go down a road of Data getting upset or Data sort of feeling like he's been neglected in some sense, right? Because, of course, there's an open question as to why she stayed away from him all these years. I mean, all these kind of things, right? But Data doesn't, I don't know that I would say the data doesn't care, but data doesn't seem to think it's a relevant question to ask.
It's more so what she says, her guilt that she's dealing with is that she had Lore dismantled and data was turned off. And, you know, she said, oh, we didn't have her, you know, but she specifically said, you know, out of fear that data would turn into another Lore at this point, refused to turn him back on. And so she's kind of known about him in the background all these years and, you know, but not able to, to talk to him because she, in a sense, attempted to have her kid aborted.
Right.
But that's, you know, if we want to take this metaphor further, that's what happened.
I don't even think aborted, I think murdered.
Well, you know, left behind, you know, she didn't grab her, you know, there's a ton of different metaphors, you know, from wartime that we could use here. But,
well, but I don't, but I mean, yeah, but you know, I don't want
to, you know, it doesn't need to be anything specific. It's true, you know.
Well, no, I think it does, because I think it is important. There's a distinction there between abortion and murder. I mean, you know, data had already been extant and data had already existed and data was a being at that point and they turned him off. I mean, that's essentially murder and they left him there. I mean, it's not abortion because she,
I guess I'm calling it that in the sense that given the way that she felt, given that she had that conversation about miscarriages, it has resonances of that. You know, in other words, there is no exact analog for what she did. It's not like, you know, we can think about a story in which a woman, you know, one of her kids died and she left the other one behind because she thought the other one would turn it. Like, we don't really have that archetype.
Well, I'm
just thinking in terms of the way that she feels guilt. Feels like a half dozen real world things. Abortion is one of them. And especially given the time. Again, given that we just had
I don't know that I would agree with that, but it's a side issue that I don't think is that important to the episode.
I'm not calling this an anti-abort or pro-abortion episode, no.
No, but I don't think that. Textually, I don't think that reading is justified.
Well, I don't think you're justified.
You know, I just don't think that. It's something that the episode really seems to think.
Okay. Okay.
We can agree to disagree on this.
We can agree to disagree on this. The point is, to a degree, I would almost think that Data would have to understand, because how many times has Data turned evil?
That is true.
At this point in the series, you can't really get mad at her.
And that is something that they don't bring up in this episode at all. You know, and it is something that I think is relevant to some degree.
But, I mean, either way, and especially by that point of the episode, what I like is that, you know, he says, oh, that's not really, you know, I don't think she's really who she says he is, you know. He knows at that point that she's an android. When he explains, you know, oh, well, she was blinking weirdly and, you know, she played the piece exactly. You know, by that point, by the time she says that she abandoned him, he knows that she's not – he thinks she's probably a robot anyway, so.
Well, I think – yeah, but I think that there's a couple interesting things there because, you know, of course – and I want to go back to this sort of abortion thing too, but, you know, there's – Data says at one point in the episode that he doesn't think she is who she says she is.
Yeah.
And at that point, we don't know that she's an android. So the implication is that there's some sort of, you know, evil thing going on here. And maybe it's like the crazy woman with the crystalline entity from a couple seasons ago or what, you know,
it's
who
anything.
Knows?
You know, she could be an alien. She could be human and a spy. She could be a Romulan spy. You know, there's
a lot of things she could be. There's an entire universe of things she could be. But she's not. She's just an android that Dr. Soong created so that his wife wouldn't die. And it's very sad and it's very poignant. And Data decides not to tell her, and that's very nice.
She also becomes a way of – because the real, you know, doctor, whatever her name is, never did get that – died before she got that chance to even deal with the fact that she, you know, abandoned her son effectively. I think this robot provides an opportunity – however, you know, true enough, for in a way her consciousness, her soul, to get that atonement for that.
Well, there's a couple things there. The number one, I think it's interesting you say abandonment, because that's exactly where I wanted to go with that. It's almost as though she gave up Data for adoption. I don't really think it feels like murder. It feels like abortion.
I mean,
because she's coming back to him and she's looking at a grown up person. in a sense, right? Someone who has, you know, she abandoned Data as a small child, let's say, and comes back 30 years later, and here he is. He has a career. He had a daughter. Like, he has a full, rich life. She's rediscovering her son in a sense. And seeing that she really did miss out on a lot.
Well, but what I would counter that by saying it's not like she set him up anywhere. Like, she literally left him shut down inside a town that was being attacked by a monster. You know, it so happened that years later, the Federation went to the planet, discovered Data, activated him, and that. But she didn't know any of that was happening, although she probably could have had an idea that somebody would come through. In other words, I don't think at the time she intended for him to be, she made no
effort for him to be turned back.
Yeah,
on.
Exactly. And in a way, for all of this, knowing the fact that he was activated and he turned out to be a Starfleet officer, in her mind, you know, turns out to be a best case scenario, you know, but, and a good stroke of luck, but not her intention. And
but at the same time, there's no indication that, for example, she was not the person who gave Starfleet a tip to go to the planet. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't know.
That's true too.
And so there's a lot of stuff that we don't know. I think it's an open question as to whether or not she ever intended Data to be turned back on. We don't know.
But
right?
the point is, you know, for her, it doesn't even matter because She's the guilt that she's dealing with is the guilt of abandoning him in the first place. And
yes,
it's that she's looking for, in a way, forgiveness for, or that, you know, that's what Data has to give forgiveness for, in a way, and what he does, I would say, forgive her for.
No, I think he does. And I also think that, you know, I don't know, because the other thing, of course, is that is this the Juliana Tainer that left him?
Well, that's.
I mean, and that's the other big, you know, question of the episode.
Yeah,
is this her? You know, and I would say that the episode is on the side that it is her, but you know, we can certainly discuss the possibility that it's not her or that it's a different version of her.
Well, I find, exactly. This is. These are questions that I do find very fascinating. I always find Data and androids in general a very interesting site for these questions to be asked, because these are questions which do go to the heart of, you know, what our own consciousness is. And, you know, there's, you know, in a way, I'm almost thinking about the Thomas Riker, you know. And
yeah, I was just thinking about that too.
You know, it's a similar enough thing in that, you know, you have an incident which completely changes. Are they the same person or not, you know? And the answer is sorta, you know, and the fact that we have, you know, we are left with these questions is very interesting. I do like sci-fi's ability to ask that, because that the question, you know, wherever technology goes into the future, at this point, you and I cannot download our brain to our computer. We're never going to in real life deal with, you know, is this robot person the same person or not? But it's a way we turn the question around to say, well, are we ourselves from moment to moment? You know, those kinds of questions in a way.
Well, right. Because, I mean, of course, everybody says that you're not the same person you were 10 years ago. You're not the same person you were 20 years ago. You know, people change. And it's like that kind of thing where if you could go back in time and meet yourself from, you know, the time when you were 20, you know, would you even recognize yourself?
I would
give
myself such a slap.
But I mean, seriously, you know, and so what I think the kind of open question about this is, in a universe where people travel by a means which destroys their body and recreates it every single time, is Picard the same person?
I was saying there's been
a ton of writing
and speculation on that point alone.
Right. So in that kind of universe, is she the same person? And I think that Star Trek is definitely on the side of not asking that question.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, they always sort of sidestep it. They always just sort of say, yeah, they're the same person. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You get the sense almost that the characters don't, you know, the characters themselves don't have answers for these questions, you know, because put it this way, just,
well, they feel like they're the same person. They think they're the same person. They're not, you know, there's not two Rikers running around.
No, but at the same time,
there is, you know, like.
But I mean, you go to the philosophy department of Starfleet Academy, and they're going to be asking these questions, and there are going to be very long debates, and nobody's going to agree. I mean,
yeah,
which is kind of why I think these concepts stay, you know, kind of interesting, because the rabbit hole can go very deep, and it is the kind of thing that, unless you're in a universe which has God and can, you know, can answer these questions, there is no definitive answer to these questions. You know what the ending of this episode reminded me a lot of, though? The Ship in a Bottle episode, and having Moriarty and the Countess in their little replicator version of the universe.
Okay.
Because in both that and this, they end up lying to an artificial entity to give them, in a way, the best possible simulated life. In other words, the doctor here is going to be living a lie. You know, she will be completely unaware of her own nature for the next 10 years until she dies. But she's also going to die knowing that, you know, her son, you know, ended up having a really great career. You know, they're going to see each other again, you know, from time to time, you know. She solved a really gnarly problem in this, you know, and that's what she does. She's really good at science, you know, and she's going to die a fulfilled and long life. And if she hasn't quite learned the truth, I don't think, you know, her happiness and her sense of fulfillment is kind of paramount. Just as Moriarty and the Countess, they're never going to know that they're in a procedurally generated video game, but that's not going to matter to them. They're going to be happy and indefinitely go on all of these adventures and have all these kooky stories and have this great romance. Like, and that's really what matters, that happiness and that fulfillment.
No, I think that's true. And I, you know, I guess that's one of the things about Star Trek that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the franchise definitely is of the opinion that in general, the truth is a good thing. But there are times when,
yeah,
the truth is not a good thing. And, you know, you have to make these hard decisions about whether or not you're going to tell people certain things or not.
I mean,
not to expand on this too much, but I think, you know, in a real sense, I think you could argue that the Federation as constructed is a very untrue,
yeah,
sort of, you know, because Earth is a paradise. People don't have to worry about things, you know, but it's all sort of constructed on sand in a way. And this is something that Deep Space Nine will certainly get into. But, you know, and so in a sense, the entire foundation of the Federation is built on things which exist only because people want them
to. Well, I mean, in general, I mean, we had a few episodes ago, Data said, you know, I was told that my programming was this, but I made a leap of faith and I decided that, no, I want to be this. I mean, in a way, the Federation is based upon people who take that leap of faith and believe in something greater than themselves, even if it isn't quite true. That's how it becomes manifest. In other words, you know, and I think it's really interesting that, you know, when someone points out to Data, like, oh, you know, she has what you always wanted. You know, she's human, you know. She just has to have that lie about that. I mean, Data is always going to know that he's an android, always going to know that he is not human, because he has a chronometer inside him. You know, he knows that every single second is ticking away. You know, he can turn these things off. He can turn off his sensor. He can maybe even mimic human senses in a lot of ways, but he knows that he's always not human. I mean, cross-reference that to Geordi, who has so much more sensory input than anybody else on the show does. You know, maybe Data's the only one who's equivalent to him in what terms of senses, but...
Well, the bat people.
You know, the bat people. Caw, caw. What bat people?
Exactly.
But Geordi fully thinks of himself as human and knows he's fully human, even though he's... So I don't know. I guess, you know, part of it suggests that, you know, you are who you believe you are, in a way, and Data can never believe that he's human. He can strive for humanity, but Data always views it as a quest. Again, remember, this is early on. Q gave him the opportunity to become human, and he said, no, I haven't. Basically, he hadn't earned that yet.
Right.
He hadn't made that journey. He's been making that journey. He's earned dreams. He's earned emotions. He's earned, you know, more abstract ways of thinking. He's earned the ability to turn his chronometer off from time to time. And he can't turn off the knowing that he's a robot, but he can refuse to turn, he can refuse to give that knowledge to his mother.
Well, yeah, but I guess, you know, yeah, but I think that there's a couple of different things there, of course, because, you know, I have talked about in the past that I don't think that Data necessarily should be focused on being human, because he's not human and he's something else. And I think that there's a beauty to him accepting that and to sort of saying, I am going to construct my own reality for myself, and I'm going to construct my own little society for myself, my own little culture.
But
you know, a culture of one individual is still a culture. And so, you know, Data wanting to be human, I think, is the wrong way for Data to think about
it. Well, see, I almost think about that in terms of I mean it depends on how you interpret the phrase becoming human, because I mean, if you're doing it in that he's not going to have the blue fairy, you know, wave her wand and, you know, he's going to turn into a real boy, like that's never going to happen. He's never going to be flesh and blood. His brain is always going to work in different ways than, you know, persons. But, you know, if you think about it almost in a Buddhist sense, where, you know, you strive to become a Buddha, but you're not, you know, it's more of an impossible goal, but a direction. So in other words, I think for Data, becoming human means adhering to certain standards of, you know, morality or social community, or he could – Data wants to have connections with other people, and he wants to have, you know, working in something greater than he is, and he wants to have, you know, faith, and he wants to have love, you know, and all of these things. Data wants that, and he's picking humanity as a rich way of earning those things. He could just as easily say, I want to be Romulan, or I want to be a Ferengi, and then he would have a very different set of goals in mind. I guess it's the arc. I guess humanity is, rather than a goal, it's more an archetype of him to live his life for.
No, yeah, I get all that, and I certainly don't think that the show, and I don't think that the show it means that Data should become a flesh and blood person. I mean, that's not even possible.
Yeah, well,
but you know, or maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, there's certain things that they could do with replicators, or, you know, whatever, transporters. They probably could do it if they really wanted to.
Yeah,
but that's, you know, they could do whatever they want. It's a fiction. You know, it's fiction. They can do whatever they want. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's more of a mindset, or it's more of a culture. But what I'm saying about that is that, you know, I don't think that it's necessarily valuable for Data to think about it in terms of being human.
I get what you mean. In other words, you're saying, you know, rather than being human, he could be the best Data he can be, you know?
Right.
Is he going to be a shitty human or a great Data? I don't know if the show,
because there are certain things about being human that are, you know, that are resultant from the biology that we exist with, and you know, Data
and
doesn't have those limitations, and so for Data to limit himself in certain ways to kind of understand what it's like to be human, quote unquote, I think is the wrong way to go.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think that would. That would go against Star Trek's general love of humanity, I think, in a way. As in, Data's quest to become human is Next Generation's way of affirming humanity. In other words, you know, no matter how advanced you can get, there are still some – because, you know, for human barely – you know, I think it's less he wants to be human and more he wants to be a person. And he wants to keep personhood and, you know, and all of those things. And the show is clear that being a person and being human are different things, you know. I don't think that the show has ever made Data feel bad for his androidness, or he has ever...
No, I think it has. And I think that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Okay.
That's just what I was thinking about is, you know, there's always this sort of wistful sadness when Data is talking about how he'll never be human. And, you know, I find that a little offensive. I mean, I don't think that that's something that Data should have more self-respect, frankly, and say, you know what, I'm not human, but I have these other qualities that are very important.
Yeah.
And I can certainly adopt all of the values and the sort of morality of the Federation, but at the same time, there are certain things that I can offer the Federation.
Well, maybe
and
that's like really where the end of Data's arc is, and maybe they just never get to it.
That could be, yeah.
You know, have him the entire time. He's, you know, in a way, that's kind of his an adolescent goal. You know, his being human is, you know, kind of a I'm surrounded by these things and I love these, but. He ultimately it's similar enough to Worf. Let's put it that way. You know, Worf has this adolescent idea of what it means to be a Klingon, just has, you know, Data might have an immature idea of what it means to be human, and they're striving to that, and finding out that it's a lot more complex than that means, and that their true identity has to be fairly syncretic because their background is kind of syncretic in a way. You know, Worf can't just live human, and he can't just live Klingon, but because he has a foot in both worlds, you know, when Worf really learns a lesson, it's usually about how to combine the two and make his own decision that takes the best of both worlds, in a way.
But I think, you know, to sort of wrap this back to inheritance and sort of the wrap up the conversation, I think that, you know, when I talk about Data, you know, having a culture of one, I think that one of the sadnesses of this episode is that Data is, you know, choosing to not expand the culture of Soong type androids in a sense, you know, because there would be value in him sharing experiences with another android that he's never really been able to do before. I don't think that he and Lore sat around and talked about what it was like to be an android. He could do that with his mother if he told her that she was an android.
Know,
but
which he even says, like, you know, I'm thinking about this as, you know, one piece is like, I feel almost selfish. Like, I want to tell her just because then I won't be alone. You know?
Right.
And
right.
All of that's, you know, packed in there.
Yeah. But I think that at the end of the day, you know, the episode sort of leaves it as an open question as to whether or not he's making the right decision not to tell her. And I like that. I like that the episode is not leading you towards any one interpretation.
I mean, it is a fairly paternalistic answer at the end of the day. I mean, that this is it reminds me almost as that old style, like, well, don't tell them, I'm not going to tell him he has cancer, you know, just let him, you know, die happy, you know, but the family will know. Like, that's exactly what's happened in this episode. Like, they have all chosen to hide a serious medical condition from her. And
I don't know that I would agree it's a serious medical condition, but yeah.
You know, to the not maybe not serious medical, a fundamental thing that makes her up. You know what I mean? Like, you would want to know the equivalent, you know, if you had if you were diabetic or something like that. You know,
it's not really like being an android is hurting her in any way.
No, but it would still. I mean, I personally disagree with that. I agree that she would have the right to know. I would want to know that about myself. If you were adopted, you would want to know that, just because that's kind of a fundamental fact about you that you have the right to know. It's somewhere along those lines, I would say, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. And I guess at the end of the day, it's an impossible question to answer.
Yeah, but I like that the episode, but. And I think the episode's very comfortable leaving it a little uncomfortable.
No, I think it is, and I think that's why I like it so much.
Yeah, because it does – you don't know who made the right decision at the end of the day.
And I think, you know, and you know, just as a final point, I think that why did Data think that she was going to survive that jump? Because that was a seriously long jump.
But
like, what was he thinking? Like, nah, you'll make it. Let's jump 100 feet. What?
Like, I mean, yeah, I got the sense he knew she was an android, and that was kind of his way of proving.
I mean, yeah, I guess. But what if she wasn't? Like, what if she was just, you know, a savant level genius that could just do math in her head? And she's dead. I mean, that was a. I mean, Data. You know, all right, good for you, Data. I will give this episode
89 stars.
89? Okay, sure.
Out of 100.
All right. Well, if you want to share your thoughts about either of these episodes, please do so on the post for this episode of the podcast at trekaboutshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/trekaboutshow. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekaboutshow. And leave us a positive iTunes review.
Yes, 5 stars or nothing.
Don't leave us a review of nothing.
I mean, like, don't do anything if you're not going to leave us a 5-star review. Like, stare at the wall.
Very good. Next week, we are talking about Parallels and the Pegasus. It's pee week on Trekabout.